You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Some parents in Michigan may wind up having to drive their kids 10, 20, even 30 miles to school next year. But these parents still aren't sure if that's going to be the case or if any of their options will be any better than their current schools. All of the confusion is because last month the State School Reform Office, the SRO, announced that 38 schools could be closed at the end of the school year. The SRO has deemed these schools as failing because they've been ranked in the bottom 5% academically for three straight years. Michigan Radio's Lindsay Smith and Jen Guerra are here now to help us sort through all the uncertainty this has caused, including a letter sent by the Governor's School Reform Office to parents of students in these targeted schools. Here's Kalamazoo mother Brianna Wolverton describing what it was like to find that letter in her mail.
Came home from work and opened the mail, doing my normal routine, and I had a letter. And when I tell you I was heartbroken to read that my son's school would possibly close. It was a really stressful day. I think maybe 3 days later, I sat down with my son and I showed him the letter. And his first thought was, does that mean I'm a failure? And that was devastating. And in the days since, we have a conversation every night about how he's not a failure. Yeah, horrible, horrible. It's hard not to get emotional when I think about it because it's just this whole process has been horrible.
So here we have this letter sent out by the school reform office directly to parents who have kids at one of these 38 schools targeted for closure. Jen, what was in the letter? Can you read part of it for us?
Sure. This is from a Detroit parent. Give me this letter. So it says, dear parent or guardian, you are receiving this letter because, insert school name, is at risk of being closed by June 30th, 2017 due to academic failure for many years. We are working to improve the opportunities for all children to get a good education. Part of that process may include offering your child the opportunity to attend a higher performing school. And then there's, you know, some more in there. And then it says, for the next 30 days, we will work with your local school district and community to finalize this decision. We will be looking at other public school options for your child. If we determine that closing your school would create a hardship because there are no better options at this time, we will not close the school. You will receive an update about the decision by the end of February, beginning of March.
Wow. And Jen, what are you hearing from Detroit parents? Is the clip we heard from the Kalamazoo mom pretty representative of what you're hearing in Detroit?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. That letter is really what sparked everything. And people are... It left a lot of questions and not a lot of answers.
And Lindsay, why is this? Why did this letter cause so much confusion all around the state for parents, for students, and for school administrators?
Well, the state did not tell administrators that this letter was going out. So the school districts, the administrators that I talked to, I mean, they were fielding questions all of a sudden from parents. You know, you can imagine the phone calls that started coming in that afternoon. Hey, I just got this letter from the state. You know, what in the world is this, in harder terms in some instances? And the superintendents were kind of like, oh, you know, I mean, they knew that this was a possibility, but they didn't like how it was handled, that the state just sort of sent them out to parents without giving them a heads up, because they're the ones that really kind of had to deal with a lot of these phone calls. The other thing for parents, I mean, a lot of parents, I think, don't necessarily separate the local school district from the Michigan Department of Education versus, in this case, the school reform office, which isn't a part of the Department of Ed anymore. And so it just creates this sort of confusion among parents that's like, why don't you guys know what's going on and why can't you tell me any answers? So it's really frustrating, that process, I think.
Remind us again just how these schools got on that list, Jen.
Well, there is a law, it's 1280C, that says it established the School Reform Office, the SRO, and it says, you know, the state can come in and close schools that are failing. It's just that the state never did that before. And then Governor Snyder moved that office from the Department of Ed, where he felt things weren't really, you know, moving in the way he wanted them to move. And he moved it over to a department that he has oversight of. And that was sort of a signal like, okay, we're going to start taking things seriously.
The gloves are off.
Right, exactly. And then there's also a law that happened with the bailout in Detroit. And that law is called Public Act 192. And that law said, you know, with this bailout, you also have to close any schools in Detroit that have three consecutive years of failing test scores. So that triggered the Detroit schools. And then the SRO was sort of like, well, we're going to apply this, you know, statewide because why treat one district differently, right? And again, they have the power to do that. And so they did.
A majority of schools on this closure list are in Detroit. And we know last week some members of the Detroit City Council and the city's legislative delegation had a big community meeting trying to clarify things for parents. Natasha Baker, who's the head of the school reform office, was not there. But Rich Baird, who's one of the governor's senior advisors, was at the meeting. And here's what he said.
We have to think about closure in terms of closing out failure, not closing out schools, not closing out buildings, and not closing out effective educational offerings.
Lindsay, what's he saying here?
You know, it's very difficult for me to answer that question. I mean, I think my hunch here is that they're trying to say, look, we're not trying to, it's difficult. I think that this is the problem. Closing schools is never going to go down well with communities and with parents and with neighborhoods that those schools are in. And so the state is trying to, in their mind, give sort of this ultimatum, like turn this around or else. And this is where it gets to the what else, you know, or else. And it's like it's trying to couch it to say, you know, don't think of this as a school closure. Think of it as an opportunity. Jen might, you know, I don't. There's also some ways to look at this as where is this going in the future? And there might be some new options sort of presenting themselves on the table as sort of the state figures out how and if they're actually going to close, you know, take this step, which to people, you know, a lot of parents is really dramatic.
Oh, yeah. Closing a school, no doubt, is political. It's personal. It's emotional. You know, there's like an entire genre of YouTube videos that show protests around school closings, right? And what Lindsay said, I totally agree with. And also, I think what she was alluding to is there does seem to be maybe a possibility of something. When I spoke with the state superintendent of schools, Brian Whiston, he talked about this quote-unquote partnership model. Again, not really sure how it would work. It would reconstitute the school. So you're closing the building, you're closing the school, and then you're reopening it in a new form. And maybe you're replacing some of the staff. It's not necessarily charter. It could still be within the district. But again, you know, more questions than answers.
Lots of questions. And we're talking about something that could happen at the end of this school year.
Yes.
Right. Well, and actually, the SRO says they are going to have answers by, you know, beginning of March.
As people have gotten these letters and raised Cain all over the state, have we gotten any clarifications from the Snyder administration?
I would say no, not really. And I think something that Lindsay and I both talked about at length is, you know, in this letter, so parents got this letter that I read part of. They also then got a list of possible districts that they could send their child to if the school closes. You know, it says in the letter, we're going to be looking at other public school options for your child. Okay, great. So they have these lists, again, just districts, not schools. And you start looking at the lists, and some of these districts don't take kids from outside of the district. If it's not an adjacent district, there might not be seats available for those children. And also, they're not necessarily better. Some of the schools in these districts are in the 12th percentile, which is just slightly better than a failing school. So if the whole point of closing a school is to raise student achievement, that's a problem if you're sending kids to schools that are just marginally better.
And with this letter, doesn't there have to be a higher performing school within a certain geographic location from the school that is being closed? I think the language in the law was closing a school cannot cause unreasonable hardship. What qualifies as an unreasonable hardship?
That's the million-dollar question right now.
Yeah, I think, Natasha Baker, the officer for the school reform office, she defines it as a school that's in the 25th percentile or higher within 30 miles.
30 miles is far.
30 miles is far. I mean, in Detroit, the U.S. Census Bureau shows that it shows that one out of four households do not have a car. And schools of choice, which allow you to go to schools in another district. Schools of choice does not require that district to provide transportation. So it is up to the parent to get the kid there. And I've asked multiple people, including the SRO, if they have a plan for transportation for these kids. And there is no plan.
There's no plan. Lindsay, you've been talking with people in Muskegon Heights and Kalamazoo. What kind of options did people get there?
Yeah, I mean, transportation is definitely, you're looking at a big issue. In Muskegon Heights, it's kind of different. This is the thing that I run into a lot in Muskegon Heights is really they just got out from under the control of an emergency manager. So they have sort of a little bit of a different situation where they, you know, for financial reasons, just got out from under the state, and they have a letter from the governor essentially saying that they cannot close their high school because of the state has loaned this district so much money to keep it afloat. So I don't really see how closing the high school is going to benefit the district or the state taxpayers. I don't think Treasury has really been looped in on some of these school reform office decisions because you have other school districts that have fallen under the emergency manager law. Benton Harbor Schools is another one that has some schools at risk for closure under the school reform office that is working with Treasury to resolve financial issues. It's not clear to me that Treasury is talking to school reform and vice versa. So those are a lot of big unanswered questions. I think transportation is a huge issue. And also when you're talking about some of these high schools, I think Saginaw, Pontiac, Muskegon Heights, sometimes when these high school close, you've seen this in Muskegon Heights a few years ago when they restarted the district. When you restart a school, or you just say that a school is going to close, a lot of those kids that are at 16, say you're age 16, 17, 18, if you're going to have to drive 40 miles away to go to a school that you may not feel you fit in, a lot of those kids just end up dropping out. We saw that in Muskegon Heights. And I think there's worry in some of those schools that at the high school level that this could lead to, you know, some of those same problems of kids just kind of falling off the radar, falling through the cracks.
Totally. And in Detroit specifically, you know, the district's research shows that when they went through this whole closure wave about a decade ago, they were losing a third of kids every time a school closed. So you have to ask yourself, like, what's the tipping point here, right? So if you're closing 5, 10, 15, 25 schools in Detroit, and if that research still holds up that they're losing a third of kids each time a school closes because they leave the district or they go to a charter, how much can Detroit survive? How much can the school district survive?
I mean, this gets to this question of whether closing a school actually brings about improvements. In fact, here's Detroit City Council member Raquel Castaneda-Lopez reading a question from a parent at last week's meeting with state officials.
Please present any data that shows school closures helps Detroit students do better. So if you have any stats from the representatives from the governor's office.
And state officials had no answer there. So Jen, what does the research show? What happens when low-performing schools are closed?
Well, that person asks a really good question. Two things to note. One, we don't have very much research at all on what happens when a school closes in Detroit. I did a whole documentary on this. We couldn't find any research except for one sort of statewide piece of research. Where we do see research is in Chicago and New York, and those show that closing a school and moving kids to another school only really improves academic outcomes if you are sending those kids to a significantly better school. So in Chicago, the first study they did around that showed that those kids had to be, if they were coming from a failing school, those displaced kids had to be moved to a school that was in the top quartile, so 75th percentile or higher. Natasha Baker's plan is putting kids in 25th percentile or higher. And again, it's not even clear that that is true because the schools we have looked at are below the 25th percentile because she doesn't identify or because the SRO doesn't identify schools. It just identifies districts. So long and short of it is, you know, closing a school to raise academic achievement can work if you're sending kids to significantly better schools, but there really aren't enough seats, right, to accommodate all those kids.
Well, let's look ahead at what's next in this ordeal. I'm sure lawsuits are being talked about. Who's announced intentions, Lindsay, to go to court to stop this?
Well, Kalamazoo and Saginaw schools are teaming up. They intend to file a lawsuit in the state court of claims. They are basically saying that the school reform office does not have the authority to close schools. Basically, Kalamazoo's superintendent put it like this. If you want to close a school in your community, run for school board and close the school. So they haven't really outlined their legal argument here, but they're saying that they don't believe the state has the authority to do that.
Are you hearing anything, Jen?
I think I'm pretty sure that Detroit, the school board gave approval to file a lawsuit if needed. Right. Yeah, I think it's just a wait and see at this
yes,
point.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. What's happening in the legislature with efforts to repeal and replace this law? I mean, is there any possibility that new legislation could come in and head off these closings?
Yes. Republican Senator Phil Pavlo, he chairs the Senate Education Committee. He's trying to repeal and replace 1280C, which established the State Reform Office and gives it the authority to close schools. But his timeline is different than the SRO's timeline. So the SRO is saying we're going to have these announcements by end of February, beginning of March. And Senator Pavlo, when I spoke with him, he said he doesn't want to put a timeline on it because he wants to find the best replacement, not just any replacement. So maybe by summer. But I'm not sure if it would be retroactive if those decisions have already gone out. There's a lot of confusion.
If I'm a mom, I'm just thinking of Brianna, who we heard at the very beginning of this. I'd be pulling my hair out right now, wondering what is going to happen and where will my baby be come fall. And I think it's important to note that most of these schools are in low-income, predominantly minority neighborhoods. What does that say more broadly about what's happening here, Lindsay?
Well, I mean, this is the thing about some of these standardized tests and sort of looking at these certain factors. As one parent put it to me, congratulations, state, you found where the poverty is. I mean, they feel like the state just keeps going after them and not really giving them the resources to empower their local districts. They feel like in many cases, like on this side of the state, like I said, Benton Harbor, Muskegon Heights, they've been through these emergency managers and they've been through reforms. And they feel like they can't hold on long enough to get something to stick in some cases. They say, look, we're growing. We have growth, but we're not achieving as well on the standardized tests. And in these cases, that's what they're looking at. The school reform office is saying you need to translate that growth into achievement. It's sort of almost a philosophical debate, I feel like, at some mm-hmm. level, Jen. I mean, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with all of that. And that's also what Detroit is saying, too. It's like, listen, we've been under state control for so many years now. We've
Forever.
Just gotten our board back. Give us a shot. And that's where we stand.
Much to watch. Well, we appreciate you bringing us up to speed on all of these movable parts. Clearly, not all of them talking well to each other and not well coordinated. And as this evolves, we'll be checking in with you again, our Jen Guerra and our Lindsay Smith. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks.
My pleasure.